Welcome, KU fans, to a spring wrap-up edition of the KU Sports Hour, and I should say spring football specifically. We're not going to talk about, you know, the weather. We're not going to talk about your various spring sports. We're not going to get into golfing. I know Tom was really hoping that we would just talk about golf for a while.
I don't think you can promise that.
Chris Thompson had a solid opening run in the web.com event. Down, he's tied for 21st last I checked. One under. You hate to end on a bogey, but a real solid round.
Well, maybe we should talk golf then. Let's just totally change the subject.
Well, he was 33rd coming into the week, and of course, if you finish with the top 25, you're in your tour card. Wouldn't that be cool? Because that PGA likes to do some fun things with tee times, and they put him and Woodland in the same group some tournament, and that'd be a lot of fun.
That would be cool. But we are here to talk about KU football, and it's spring and kind of all that went wrong with parts of it, and if they're kind of figure out if there was anything really positive to come out of it. I guess we'll start by introducing who's joining me here. Obviously, you've heard from Tom, our golf enthusiast and renowned supporter of Chris Thompson
and Gary Woodland.
And Gary Woodland.
And Chase Hanna, who's on the Latino American Tour. Latino America Tour. America.
That went well.
Yeah. That's what they call it. They don't call it the Latin America Tour. They call it the Latino America Tour.
Okay. I just learned something. Yeah. I had no idea.
That's like double A. Chris is in triple A and Gary's in the majors.
Okay. Matt Tate, did you just learn that?
I did.
Matt Tate is with us.
Hi.
Matt Tate, you've covered a lot of spring football in your past. You haven't been around the team in a couple of years, at least in the spring.
Right.
What did you tend to look forward to in the spring? And I mean, did you always think that it was like a critical part of the off season? And I mean, what did you always kind of hope that would come out of it?
You know, I mean, really, especially early on, I always looked forward to the game. And yeah. Now we didn't have one this year. So that was a little different, I'm sure. You had those fan appreciation days that you cover, and those are cool because the fans get to come out, and that's basically what this was. It was a chance for people to come out and watch these guys practice a little bit and do some stuff. So that's disappointing for sure, you know, and it happened at least once when I was covering the team too.
They didn't have a real game.
It was the same thing. They just didn't have the numbers that they needed to break into teams, and with this it was the O-line. I think probably with that year it was the O-line if I remember correctly. So, I think everybody wants to go into spring excited about who's going to win what battle and things like that.
Right.
And I think that's human nature, and I know that's what I used to think about and write about too. But the more I did it, the more I learned that's not really how these coaches approach it. I don't think they're looking for guys to win battles in the spring. I think they're looking for guys to get better and learn the program and the system and maybe to get like a head start on some of that stuff. But I don't think these coaches, this group or any of the coaches that I worked with, I don't think they go into spring hoping battles will be won or decided. And you know, and some of them are by default. But with the quarterback position especially, it's, you know, it would be weird if it was won in the spring because they haven't really had that much time to do much.
Right. And I think, Tom, I think you'd agree that neither one of us thought that they would really name a starter this spring, or they weren't going to open spring and say, Peyton Bender's our starter and we'll see how this plays out from here or anything like that. I don't know. What was your kind of take on how everything played out? I mean, I entered it thinking this – no, nothing's going to be decided in the quarterback battle this spring. It'll be decided in camp, or maybe it'll be decided on the day of the season opener.
Yeah, you know, I think there are advantages to naming a quarterback. When they named Todd Reising and Kerry Meyer, of course, that involved a position switch for him. But more than that, it's just the team can fall in line behind the quarterback, and that's not an issue in anybody's minds. And you don't have certain guys trying to get in this guy's camp, other guys in that guy's camp. But did I expect it to happen? I didn't. But it would be nice to see one of these years. Maybe it's just a case that they don't have anybody who steps forward and wins it.
Yeah, look, this is pretty interesting, and I know people get tired of me writing about the Broncos or tweeting about the Broncos, but Broncos' quarterback position the last couple of years has been atrocious. And this year they went out and spent some money and got a guy in Case Keenum who had the Vikings in the NFC Championship game last year and had a good year. And what I've been reading from their OTAs and stuff like that is all the veterans, all these other guys, receivers, they're in love with this idea. They are absolutely in love with the idea that the quarterback battle in their camp right now is for second and third. It's not for the starter. They know who the starter is. They can follow that guy like Tom just talked about. And beyond that, he can step up and assert himself as a leader. And so I do think there's an advantage to it if you can do it. But I also don't think you should just do it to do it. You know, so that's kind of the problem that Kansas has had over the years and obviously has this year. It would be bad to pick the wrong guy, you know, so wait until you know for sure. And I don't know. I haven't been around, but I think that's probably what they're doing. They're waiting to make sure because you certainly don't want to name a guy in the spring and then have to change your mind even in August or whatever.
Yeah, and I think headed into the spring, we knew it would kind of play out this way just because we had seen enough of Peyton Bender and Carter Stanley to know that, like, neither one of them is just suddenly going to be at this whole other level, you know. All of a sudden, you're an all Big 12 quarterback, and you weren't a few months ago.
Right.
Like, it doesn't happen just overnight like
right.
that. And so the only thing that was kind of in play, I thought, was maybe Miles Kendrick coming in and blowing everybody away with his ability, and then maybe by the end of the spring, they'd be like, you know what? This is his team now. This is our quarterback. But that didn't obviously happen either. We got to talk with Miles on a few occasions this spring. We didn't get to obviously see him play a lot because they didn't have the spring game. They just had the glorified practice that was open, and you know what was your Tom? What are your initial impressions of him as a leader? Because that was something that kept getting brought up. His leadership qualities, Bay seemed to really like that. But what do you think about him as a leader and a player? And obviously we're working with a very limited.
It's hard with a player, but as a leader, he couldn't have been more impressive. His personality. He's very much a communicator. He's very much a look you in the eye and talk to you. And he's very much a real person. That's what you want in leadership. He just, you ask him a question, he'd answer it honestly, and had an engaging personality. Everything about him just screamed leader. And physically, he just looks like he can take the pounding. He is built kind of like a linebacker almost. I mean, he's really a thick build, and I think he's probably would be their best running quarterback, best natural leader. And then it just comes down to, is he the worst passer of the three, and is that why there's a deadlock here?
Right.
And that could be the case.
Yeah, I mean, based on the one practice that we got to watch, I'd say he was probably best like at those kind of quick throws, which this offense features so heavily, and kind of the intermediate throws. But when he was asked to throw the ball deep, a little less accuracy.
Stayed up in the air a little bit, overthrew him. Looked a little like Montel for much of his career, throwing the deep ball.
I think
threw one nice one, but then some other ones where he missed by quite a bit.
Yeah, one looked really good, but as you mentioned, a few of them just kind of hung up there, and that's the last thing you need on
right.
a deep pass. But unfortunately, we didn't get to see him really kind of used as a rusher. We didn't get to see that mobility that I'm sure he will bring. And I mean, last year we didn't see a lot of that out of Stanley, but this would basically be a better version of a running quarterback in Stanley. That was always what they talked about.
I think Stanley is pretty mobile.
Yeah.
You know, I like that about him. I like Stanley's leadership too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he is great on the accuracy front, you know, even the intermediate balls.
Right.
And I think he might not have as quick a release as like Bender. And Bender's the best deep thrower. I think he throws a really nice ball. It's just a question of, will Kansas have the pass protection to take advantage of an arm like Bender's when you've got a guy who's not really a runner at all?
Right. I guess this is all relative, but to me this seems like kind of a better quarterback situation than the team has had in recent years, just because there are three candidates, and I mean, obviously none of them are great, or one of them would already have won the job, but
right.
it seems like you've got more talent that you're working with. I mean, do you see that?
I think so, because Stanley and Bender have more experience now, and that always helps. And then I, you know, it's hard though when it's not live, when they can't hit you, and because really, I hate to bag on the old line, but it doesn't look as if they've really shored up the pass protection.
Yeah, and if that's the case, obviously Peyton Bender really struggled when the O-line broke down.
Right.
And those two games that Riverty missed due to injury, and obviously Riverty ended up having to retire because of
right.
a history of concussions, but when he wasn't there, the offense was just, I mean, completely flatlined, and Bender really struggled. So if they know going into this year that O-line's going to be a pretty big issue again, that might lead them to go away from Bender, right?
I guess, which tells you he probably was the most impressive in the spring.
Yeah.
Or they would have already assumed those things you delineated there and have gone away from him. But my guess would be he was the most impressive passer in the spring. But the spring, you can't tackle guys.
No, no. And, like, when we watched practice, I mean, it was even a case where there were plays where the D-line would just blow past the offensive lineman in front of him. And then, you know, you're just kind of standing there.
Right.
It's obviously a play that would have been blown up or someone would have been sacked, but it's not actual game situations, so it's hard to glean too much from it.
It's a really tough job right now at this point in the Kansas football program to be the quarterback.
Yeah.
One, because you're going to be on the lookout all the time for getting creamed, and the other thing is they have not had great receivers. Mm-hmm. Steven Sims is really, really good. But beyond that, I mean, Chase Harrell had a nice little flash early in the year and then sort of didn't follow through with it. I think I have the part of the year right. Or did he have a touchdown against Oklahoma State in the last game? I can't remember.
No, I think you're thinking of Ferris finishing the season
Ferris
strong.
Finished his season strong. Yeah, he's got potential.
Yeah.
But I thought there were a lot of drops last year.
Yeah.
And they don't get wide open either behind the defense very often.
Right.
So hopefully there will be an upgrade there in receivers. And, again, I don't know why there wouldn't be.
Tate, I mean, in your years of covering the team, who was probably the best receiver you covered, would you say? And then after you come up with that answer, I mean, how would you compare him to Steven Sims?
Wow.
Because Sims is entering his senior year. He's obviously the best receiver on the team. And he's put up pretty decent numbers, and numbers that you think would be far better if, you know, you were playing for a team with a steady offensive line that was able to protect a quarterback.
Right. For you, Ted, have to be one of the transfers.
We'll count. I mean, I obviously was around for Meyer and Briscoe and those guys, but I won't count that. We'll say since Turner Gill.
Oh, okay. So did cover teams that those guys were on?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So
but
those
are
the obvious
answers. The Miami of Ohio guy and the Maryland guy.
Nick Harwell and Nigel King were the guys that came to mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both of those guys were really good. I mean, I thought they were really good, and I don't think that Nigel King was bigger and physical and had great hands and so just a different player than Sims, different style of receiver.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't think that Sims is I don't think it's wrong to put Sims in that category at all. I mean, I think this guy is. He's legit. He's a big time player, and he's tough, and he's fast, and he's physical, even at his size, and all of that. So, I mean, it comes down to the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
If they had a line, they might have a quarterback. If they had a quarterback, they might have Sims setting records. But he's doing the best he can. But I think he's. I mean, I think their receiving core right now is pretty solid for who they are and where they're at. And, I mean, outside of those guys, I can't really think of too many more. Kale Pick was okay as a mm-hmm. receiver. Trey Parmalee had moments, but Chris Omiji, Andrew Terzilli.
Digging deep.
Turned out to be okay later in his career. Those are some deep names. I'm just trying to think of, make sure we didn't miss any. I'm trying to think of any others.
Well, remember one year there were no touchdowns from the wide receivers.
Right. Yeah. So,
I mean, think about that.
Yeah. That,
you go 12 games and not a single wide receiver touchdown.
Justin McKay was a part of that team.
Yeah.
I think Sims and I like Fares and his potential a lot.
Yeah.
I did when they signed him. And I still like Booker. I mean, I still think that's a guy who, could break out. It's obviously getting close to time to do it or not.
Yeah, he's a senior too.
Yeah, so he needs to show up big time, and I think the physical tools are there for him to do so.
He might have the most kind of professional approach of anybody in the program. That guy just works hard in everything that he does.
Teammates love him. Yeah. Coaches love him.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, the guy who, you know, you don't want to base everything on high schools, particularly in Kansas, but this guy made circus catches I've never seen anybody make live, and that's Kenyon Tabor when he was at Derby High School, and he's 6'4", 215. He was going to be a hybrid tight end receiver. I think he would have been more of a receiver. This guy, 6'4", good leaping ability, incredible hands, and incredibly strong for a high school kid. He was going to be really good really quickly, and he's had the neck and back injuries, which is a shame because this guy, that's just a bad break for Kansas right there.
Yeah, Beatty raves about Tabor and what he could be if he ever does get healthy, you know, and I think we're a long way from that happening probably. It sounds like they've tried to find back experts to see all over the country and just trying to figure out what they can do with it. You know, hopefully for the kid's sake and for the sake of the team, he can at least get to a point where he can play. But we really have no clue at this point if that's going to happen. So, I mean, the receiving core from this program has really taken some hits the past couple of years. I mean, I guess we can start with Jay Sternberger, who left and transferred and played 1 year at JUCO and then ended up at A&M and was just like the star of their spring game.
Right, A&M. If A&M's recruiting you, you know you're legitimate. And they liked him when he was here. That's the thing. They talked very highly of him. But Ben Johnson stood in his way, and he just didn't want to wait.
Yeah, I think that had to be part of it. But, I mean, it's just shocking that – because I think from the day they signed Sternberger, Beatty talked about his great potential, loved how athletic he was, how long he was. And then it just – it got to a point where Sternberger decided to move on. And I mean,
he loved it here.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to know him a little when he was signing and as senior and even his first year. He loved it here. I mean, he made great friends. He liked being a part of this team. I mean, it wouldn't have, in my opinion, it wouldn't have been that hard to keep him happy. But obviously.
Yeah, he had a lot of friends on the team, a lot of guys that he was close with.
He supported KU too, you know. He was at volleyball matches and he was at other events and friends with people outside of the football program and other student athletes. I think, you know, I think he really loved it here. So that's too bad. That one's gonna look like a bummer. I mean, he's poised to have a monster year for Jimbo Fisher, who was his first recruit
as Texas A&M head coach after he left Florida State. Jay Sternberger was the first guy that he added to the recruiting class.
Wow.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
But then, so I guess that happened last spring. He left during the spring of 2017. Then you fast forward to preseason camp. Liquiviante Gonzalez gets kicked off the team. And then this past offseason, Chase Harrell ends up leaving. Right. He had a tough offseason. Witness his brother killed.
Jeez.
I mean, I can't imagine going through that. And then there was a DUI here in town a couple months later, and it seemed like he might end up sticking around, but you get the sense that maybe the coaching staff and Harrell decided it'd be best if he just moved on.
Yeah, it's hard for anybody to question whether that fresh start will be a good thing. It seems, you know,
I think it'll be great for him.
Yeah.
And he's got some ability.
For sure. Yeah, we saw a little bit of that last year.
3 touchdowns.
Yeah. Yeah. Long guy, athletic guy.
Yep.
He's someone that Beatty always brought up Mike Evans when he talked about Chase. Yeah,
that might be a little much. But
right.
Clint Kubiak liked him, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the guy put in the work. I mean, he became a physical specimen compared to the player he was when he first got here. So it's too bad. Yeah, that Harrell and Sternberger. That's two guys that, you know, certainly would have been nice and probably help, but you know, I think they've recruited really heavily at that position.
That and the defensive backfield, right. The secondary has been really recruited heavily. A lot of scholarships spent, and you wonder if maybe that has cost the offensive line a little. They've recruited some numbers there, but when you're not sure you're getting a real Division I prospect, maybe you need to even over recruit the numbers at O-line.
Yeah, and it seems like maybe taking so many receivers and taking so many DBs is
because,
okay, we'll just get as many athletes, fast guys as we can in here, and then we'll find spots for them. And, you know, I'm not a D1 football coach. I don't know if that's a good approach or a bad approach. It sounds like a good idea to have as many athletes as you can and speed, but...
But you need football players.
Yeah, and the point is, the reason I brought it up was because if there's one area they can probably survive, it's probably receiver, you know, losing a couple of guys, and they still have established guys that have played.
Yeah, so headed into this summer, Sims is obviously your number one guy at receiver, but I think it's kind of wide open for number two, you know? And last year there really wasn't a number two. It was just a group of guys that kind of contributed, and Sims was obviously the guy. But I think Evan Ferris is someone who's likely as anybody to kind of step forward and have a really big year, or relatively big year to what he had last year.
Yeah. If Booker had Ferris mentality in terms of like out there on the field, I mean, like you said, the guy's a hard worker and the most professional dude in the program. So not that type of mentality, but just that fire.
Mm.
I mean, Booker's a great kid, and I don't know Evan too well, but. I like the way he plays. He plays hungry. He plays nasty. That kind of mentality would probably help Booker a lot, in my opinion.
And I think, obviously, Daylon Charlotte is a guy who could take traits from both of those guys.
Yeah,
follow Jeremiah Booker's example in terms of how much work you're going to put into everything, and then kind of look at Evan Ferris and see about how much he competes.
Right.
And try to mimic that. And then you've got a pretty decent starting point with your receiving crew. Quan Hampton's obviously a guy that got banged up last year, so we were kind of limited in seeing how much he could contribute, but he's a guy that Doug Meacham loves.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
And he's super fast. Small guy, but crazy athletic.
What about Shadler gone?
No, Shadler's still here. I was about to mention him. Yeah, he's another guy. And then Stephon Robinson is a JUCO receiver that they added this spring that the coaches and the quarterbacks spoke pretty highly of, so there's a decent base to work with that receiving core.
Yeah, I definitely agree. They just, you know, you need to kind of have the pieces fall in place. I think I sometimes that committee thing,
right?
In my opinion, it prevents guys from falling in line and knowing their role and being able to execute out of that as your base. And I get it. I mean, we know the slogan, the mantra, earn it, you know, everybody earns every rep every day type of thing. But I just still think at some point you do that over time, and then you slot guys, and then people know their roles and know how to fill them and play them. And, I think that helps. And I think that maybe has been lacking a little bit.
This spring was so unique with just the fact that they weren't able to really scrimmage. I mean, I asked Joe Dineen and Steven Sims about, you know, how different was this spring. And, you know, Sims said basically past years, maybe every Saturday would be a scrimmage day. You know, you kind of have that waiting for you at the end of the week. And you get out there and it's as live as you can do in the off season as far as trying to get in-game situations. They didn't have that at all the entire spring. You know, obviously you're able to take team reps.
Yeah.
But that's not the same.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, you know, in some ways maybe that's weird and bad, and you scratch your head on
that.
That's
what I was about to ask you. What I mean, how much could that hurt you, not having those scrimmage reps in this
one? Good question. I guess from my perspective, it seems like if you're Kansas and you're 3-33 in the Beatty era and struggling in the last, you know, 8-9 years, maybe trying different things is the way to go, because obviously what you've been doing isn't necessarily working. So that might be a pretty simplistic way to look at it, but it seems like, okay, if you scrimmaged a whole bunch every week last year, maybe don't do it this year and see if that allows you more time to focus on technique and fundamentals and things like that. And obviously you have to have bits of both, otherwise you're going to be hung out to dry out there. But I don't know if that's the reason they're doing it. Obviously, none of us know. But you know, it kind of comes back to that, man, if you keep doing the same thing and expecting different results, maybe you're asking for trouble. At least this way they're changing it up, and maybe something will be different.
So the season doesn't start for close to 4 months. So I mean, Tom, how valuable do you think those scrimmage reps in the spring are? I mean, there's definitely value to them. That's what everybody does, basically, nationwide. Right. So to not have them, how much could that hurt you think?
I think it hurts that they had those injuries anyway and seemed to back off. I don't know how much contact they had in the spring and how much they really were able to accomplish because of those injuries. And also evaluating is tough when you have so many injuries. I don't know, man. They have some catching up to do in the summer camp, I think.
Yeah, once August comes, you're kind of starting in a deficit, aren't you? Just because you didn't have those scrimmage reps?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, in June they'll do a good job. It seems to be that the strength coach knows what he's doing, and Zach mm-hmm. Woodfin and his staff. And they'll make the most of that time. But then, man, the early season games are so important for them because they need to get a win.
And those are the most winnable games, the ones at the start of the season.
And, that first game, you got to win that to get some confidence, and they usually do. Beatty is 2-1 in that game. He's 1-32 in the rest of them, but so that's big. Nicholls State is 25th in their preseason poll, I think. So that's a team that if you don't play well, you're not going to beat them, but they should beat them. And Rutgers is a winnable game, and Central Michigan doesn't have their quarterback anymore, so it's going to be real important that they are healthy and up to speed, because let's say they go 3-0, that could generate a little buzz here where people would tune back into football. You can't go 3-0 unless you're 1-0 and 2-0, but. I mean, what? Let's just say that happened.
I mean, we've said it every year, and I'm not saying it won't happen this
year. No, you're right, we do.
But it's true. Like, I mean, and every year that you go deeper into this, the more mind-blowing it would become. I mean, 3 years ago, if they started 3-0, people would have been like, wow, this is exciting. Then the next year, it would have been more exciting. And then the next year, more exciting. And if it happened now, when people are expecting 0 or 1 as the win total, if you started 3-0, I don't know that people would even know what to do. I mean, the buzz would be there.
How about go to the game?
Yeah.
That would be one thing to do.
That would probably, if they could remember how to do that, that would be one
problem.
And I don't say that. We've said that every year. I don't say that in a negative way. I mean, it just shows how perplexing the whole thing is, because is it crazy? No, it's not. I mean, is it going to happen? No, it's not. But every year you can sit there and you can look at it and you can say, well, here's how it could. And then every year, for one reason or another, it hasn't. But it would be mind blowing. People would go nuts.
That's the thing about a program like Kansas. Just getting any type of momentum would obviously benefit everybody involved. And suddenly the season looks a lot different if you can actually win some non-conference games. But also, when you fail early on in the season, I think it almost makes it like you're drowning. You know, you're drowning in your own failures, and it's just harder and harder to grasp, to get up and just get some air, because there's just that history of coming up short. And I mean, how can that not enter your head? Oh, here we go again. Yeah. I think they do their best to avoid that type of attitude, but
it's hard.
If you're being realistic about it, I mean, how do you escape that if you keep getting off to bad starts in a season? Tom, you wrote earlier in the week about, I can't remember the exact gambling website, but one of them set the line for wins a season at 3, which I think we were all pretty surprised by.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, how do you get to 3? I was quite surprised.
Yeah, because, I mean, those are the type of discussions that we have every now and again throughout the offseason. Like, boy, where are the wins going to come? You know, where do you see this team being most competitive? And I don't know, I think the consensus was this could be another 1-11 year or maybe a 2-10 year, but I don't think anybody thought any higher than that.
Yeah. You wonder, one way to look at that, if you want to look at it optimistically from the Kansas standpoint, because I've been thinking, I was just thinking about this exact thing today. How do they get to 3? Well, one way is they don't think very highly of Rutgers. And Rutgers is on the road. So if you're looking at a team like Rutgers who's not very good and they're on the road, well, their over-under is 4 for a reason. They don't think they're that good. So maybe they're thinking that game's close to a coin toss and Nicholls State has won, and maybe they're thinking Central Michigan without Shane Morris at quarterback is close to a coin toss. But then even at that, so if those are two coin tosses,
yeah,
you give them two wins.
Right.
And where's that third one come from?
I know, that's the tough part, because obviously the rest of the Big 12 is so far ahead of them. I mean,
they are, even though there are a lot of quarterback battles going on, it's yeah. beyond quarterback. I mean, they were blowing Kansas away week after week last year, except K-State.
That's true. That was probably the best game of the year, wasn't it? The K-State game here in Lawrence.
Yeah.
30-20, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, every other game was just not competitive.
No.
In the Big 12. So that, I mean, that's why we were, I think, blown away by the number being at 3.
Right.
Over or under.
Yeah. It still doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. I guess moving on really quickly, we'll get to the defensive line. That's obviously a unit that suffered a really significant loss this offseason when Dorrance Armstrong ended up leaving early to enter the NFL draft, and rightfully so. You know, he ended up being a fourth-round pick of the Dallas Cowboys, and I'm sure that was a huge moment for him personally, but I think a lot of his teammates really enjoyed seeing him get to that level too, because they have so much respect for him and what he's done and kind of his approach to everything. Obviously, he didn't have the greatest junior year because, I mean, he was preseason defensive player of the year.
Right.
Wasn't able to produce statistically what he had done the year before as a sophomore when he really broke out and started to make a name for himself. But how do you go about replacing a Dorrance Armstrong? And Tom, do you think some of the guys that they brought in at least maybe can make the unit as a whole a little bit deeper? Because you're just not going to get the exact same kind of
No, game. You're not. And he did have more tackles than anyone in the, yep. Any defensive end in the Big 12. So he obviously was good against the run.
Yep.
It just seemed like he had hurries that used to be sacks. But well, it'll be interesting to see if he can play at a high weight like he's at now, mm-hmm. or if he is just the guy who slows down when he's at this weight. You know, because the 40 time wasn't good. But I do think there's some depth there. It looks like Josh Sihambe's career is over, but they've moved Kyron Johnson to the outside, not at linebacker. Now he's an edge rusher.
He's doing some hybrid stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's one way. Willie McCaleb, they think pretty highly of him, I think. And then a guy who wasn't here, Azur Kamara.
He's not here yet, but
right.
He's supposed to be here in the summer.
Yeah, and he was a highly recruited JUCO player, so there's a reason to hope. And I do think there's some depth at that position, and you know, you're not going to make up for Dorrance, like you say, but I'm not concerned that, oh no, who are they going to play there? I think they're going to have good guys there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people on the D-line, and I don't know how much Beatty talked about him, but other players mentioned Stevens McKenzie,
yep.
and Cody Cole, who are both JUCO defensive linemen who have been here all spring, and I think that those guys stood out. And Daniel Wise seemed to think pretty highly of both of them. And
yeah, Stevens McKenzie's a good rusher of the passer. He's got some burst, and he's a great guy. He's really excited to be in the program. And Cole, yeah, had good spring, and also J.J. Holmes. Definitely has lost a lot of weight, which can only help. He wasn't bad last year, and he was clearly overweight. So, and E.C. Holani is back, and he's a pretty good football player. So I think in the middle of that line to go with Daniel Wise, and, you know, Keyshawn Simmons mix in is mm-hmm. kind of a sort of a defensive end if you're in a three-man front or a tackle if you're in a four-man. I thought he was around the ball a decent amount last year. You don't hear the coaches talk about him a whole ton, but I thought he was halfway decent at depth guy.
They seem to have some guys that are, I mean, obviously not everybody is as effective as Daniel Wise, but a lot of guys that are kind of in that mold of just, you know, huge hulking defensive linemen that you can kind of maybe occupy some stuff at the line of scrimmage. And I think it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what they can do with Kyron Johnson, because he's a fast guy. He's put on a little bit of weight since when he first got here a year ago. I think maybe does he become your pass rusher, and or do you start using?
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Who else could possibly put some pressure on the quarterbacks?
Well, Najee Stevens McKenzie,
yeah,
and Wise from the middle. Last year he had, what do you have, 7.5 sacks?
I think so, yeah.
That's great for a defensive tackle.
For sure.
That's, and he looks like he's in really good shape, and he's a serious guy. He's really wants to make a career out of football, and he's doing everything right, going about it in the right way.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they feature him on the edge some, because they did that a little bit last year. But especially if the bulk of their defensive linemen are more suited to being playing on the interior, then you can use a guy like Wise who maybe can be a little bit more dominant on the edge. And I mean, he's going to win his share of one-on-one battles and plays as hard as anybody.
He's strong. He's got a great motor and a great personality.
Tate, you covered 1 year of Dorrance, is that right? His freshman year?
Yeah.
And obviously that wasn't like a huge year for him.
Right.
He was smaller back then.
Right,
He hadn't added all that weight, but saw a little bit of his athleticism, right? And what were your impressions of him back then, and then how impressed were you with where he ended up?
Yeah, I mean, I looked back at this recently, and I don't know if I stumbled upon it or if I was actively looking for it or maybe some combination of both, but he was one of the guys after signing day, his senior year of high school, that landed on those sort of lists that I used to do about, you know, top five guys who could make an impact soon, or top five talents in this whole class or whatever. And if I'm not mistaken, he was number one on that type of list. And that mostly is because of what the coaches were saying. It wasn't,
right,
you know, me evaluating. I don't know that stuff. But you know, and it's hard to predict it too. But I think that was an indication right away and early on. And it's funny because we talked about Chase Harrell, and that was a guy who was drawing comparisons to Mike Evans, a big-time NFL receiver, on signing day, as early as that.
Right.
And then you get sort of the opposite, and you know, it's taken him a while to pan out. He's still not fully there, and who knows what his future holds. But then you get a guy like Dorrance, who they liked. It was very clear. But, you know, they weren't comparing him to Lawrence Taylor or you know, Derek Thomas or anything like this. You know, so it's just funny how that happens a little bit. Because why not? I mean, I think what that tells you is that this guy, you know, there was a lot to like in the beginning. And then he showed up and he went to work. And I'm not saying Chase Harrell didn't go to work, but he had some limitations, quarterback, offensive line,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Dorrance put in the time, put in the work, and just ended up becoming a monster and the kind of guy who could make a name for himself and could get noticed like that, because I thought what stood out to me most about him, I mean, he his whole position, his whole existence is winning one-on-one battles, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how he became somebody. But he was still such a teammate. He was still everything he did and everything he wanted to do was always within the realm of team and collective, you know, togetherness and things like that. I respect and admire the heck out of that, because it would have been real easy for him to be like, well, we're not winning, and I've got a chance to get drafted. I'm going to just go worry about myself. And I don't think he ever did that. I think he was always about the team, and it's cool to see that. I mean, he's a terrific dude, and you talked about all of his teammates being thrilled for him and happy for him. It goes way beyond the guys that are here and on this team or played with him last year. It goes back 3-4 years, guys that graduated, you know, when he was a freshman and got to know him a little bit. They're thrilled for him too, and that tells you all you need to know about his character.
Yeah, I'm obviously no like expert on judging a guy's talent and how he's going to pan out, but I'm convinced he's going to have a long NFL career. He's going to play as long as he wants to. He's going to make a lot of money. He's going to have success.
Yeah.
Because I think he has all the traits that you need. And I know his 40 time obviously wasn't where he wanted it to be, but I mean, think about it. How often do you need a defensive end running in a straight line?
Right.
You know, he's agile. He's strong.
Yeah.
He has the right kind of mindset.
There will be some series where he doesn't run 40 yards.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, total.
Right.
Three and out, he didn't run 40 yards. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, it's something that's a concern just because of the weight. You don't worry, you know, you don't want him heavy, but...
And to be clear, he just put on muscle.
Yeah,
He didn't
burgers.
Right.
Yeah, right. And muscle weighs more than fat. It's just that's how it goes.
Yeah.
But it did make him, you know... More to carry around,
yeah,
for sure. And it's like putting a bigger engine in a car, a heavier engine in a car. It's not going to go as fast. It just, you know, it won't right away. So, but yeah, one of my buddies is a scout for the Cowboys, and I went to high school with him, and I was talking with him after the draft, and he says they're in love with this pick. They absolutely wanted him. They you know, almost traded up to get him. They were thrilled he fell where he did. They think he's going to be big time, really big time. So that's pretty cool.
And other than the money, I mean, obviously the money is important because that's what he's doing for his career. But if it weren't for the money, if all draft picks were paid the same, I think getting picked by the Cowboys in the first round is like getting picked in the first by anybody else. Because that's the Dallas Cowboys, and that is the coolest uniform.
Well, not to mention for a guy from Texas.
Yes.
I mean, forget about it. Like that you. I mean, can you imagine being him? I mean, okay, you know, you could get drafted by Baltimore, or you could get drafted by, you know, some other program, the Chargers or whatever. But then you're from Texas and you grew up with that,
Cowboys.
And they call your name. Jerry freaking Jones wanted you. Like, yeah. That's cool. That I agree with you. That's super cool.
Tom, do you have any? I don't know. What's your take on his prospects as an NFL and defensive? And I guess he might end up being just an outside linebacker who pass rushes. We don't really know yet.
Yeah, I would think he'd be a defensive end, and the only thing that is scary that I think is that 40 time, just because it came after he put on weight, and some athletes, they reach a tipping point where that's not where they're most efficient. So maybe they'll end up taking weight off him, and he'll be on the small side for defensive end. But he's got a great motor. He really wants to learn and get better. He's a great student of the game. He's going to be a great teammate. Teammates love him because he's got kind of a good sense of humor and he's a nice guy. I think he'll be a success, and I think fourth round does seem like a good time to pick him up. You know, I mean, he's not a risky pick because he's a good guy.
I'm wondering, what one of the bigger things that happened, or one of the bigger coaching staff changes that happened this offseason, was them bringing in Bill Miller. Who's been around legit programs throughout his career, and how much of an impact can that make? I mean, because he's the new linebackers coach, and they're only going to play like two linebackers. But just having him around, how much do you think that benefits the KU defense?
I think it benefits him a lot. Bradford was a real good coach, but just the whole shakeup in the defensive coaching seems like a good thing. But beyond just his coaching, and he's a veteran, he's coached for so many huge names in the game, from Jimbo Fisher to Nick Saban. There's others. I'm spacing on them at the moment. But the other thing is, he's really well connected in the Kansas JUCOs, which helps you not just among JUCOs. That helps you with Kansas high schools too, because those JUCO coaches have great relationships with the high school coaches. So they can tell, well, what's this coach like? Well, he overrates his players. You better watch out. Or he underrates them. If he says he's good, believe him, because he's a guy you can believe. Stuff like that. And then they're talking. They say, oh, Bill Miller stopped by, huh? Yeah, he's a great guy. Whatever he tells you, you can believe. You know, that kind of stuff. He's got a name in this area, but not just Kansas. He's also got a name in Florida. He's been recruiting the Florida area for a long, long time. And it helps to pick off a couple. He already got a linebacker out of there for this recruiting class. I think it helps to...
Kenny Bastida.
Yeah. Helps to pick up a Florida guy here and there, you know, that may slip through the cracks down there. I just think that... And he wants to be here. There's a guy who, even if there is a coaching change, you know, the new coach would look long and hard before not letting him stay around, because he's a proven coach.
Do you think... I mean, obviously he's going to be working with Clint Bowen. How much could Bowen, how much will Bowen pick his brain on things as he's making decisions about everything involving the defense?
I think a lot. I think they've worked together in the past. So I think that's a good relationship. And also with Bradford, he had a great relationship. Clint, that formed quickly. A lot of mutual respect there. So I think that the defense is going to be better, even without Torrence Armstrong. It needs to be better, because it wasn't good last year.
The crazy thing about the defense, and obviously it had some major issues, was it did seem to improve throughout the year. It was just that it was so bad at the beginning of the year that you kind of lump everything together. But
yeah, didn't improve enough, though.
Right, not enough. I mean, you're, and some of that is on the offense too. You know, when the offense is going three and out, turnover, three and out, it's hard for the defense to be as impactful as you would like for it. But I think the defense, as you mentioned, should be better this year because so many of the guys are back. And
they're back, and then you have reinforcements from the JUCOs. And usually by this time of year, you're hearing, well, this JUCO was a swing and a miss. He's not going to be any good. Nothing but good things about the JUCOs who were here in the spring. I mean, this is, you know, through the grapevine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's stuff that they're not just, you know, saying it coach speak. They like the guys they've had, and the guys who are on the way, Elijah Jones was recruited by some big-time schools who backed off because they had someone else they liked just as much, and that someone else was able to either get there at the semester or was a more sure thing academically that you didn't have to sweat anything out. You know, Iowa and bigger schools than that, better football schools than that, like this guy. So if he finds his way here and everything goes well for him academically, there's a name to keep an eye on, an ear to. And that is Elijah Jones, who is a tall, lanky cornerback who's a serious talent.
Yeah, he seems to be a guy that, I mean, we don't know for sure, but he could end up plugging in the starting lineup, you know. Maybe he replaces Shaq Taylor at one of your corners.
Right, or Hassan Defense.
Yeah. Although everybody was really, really impressed by Defense this spring. It sounded like I think Beatty might have even said that he improved as much from last fall to now as anybody on the roster. So yeah, I mean,
like that.
Yeah, good news on that front. But
and Robert Topps,
yeah,
who redshirted last year, could be the backup. Backup isn't really the right term for a second teamer because guys get banged up and there's a lot of, when teams are passing on you, you rest your starters. It could be on the depth chart at Nickelback, Bryce Tornaden and then Robert Topps. So that was good to hear.
Yeah, and he's a long guy. He's 6'2", I think.
Yep, and a bigger guy.
And I think Beatty was feeling pretty good about their cornerback situation this spring.
Kyle Mayberry had a good spring, according to Beatty.
And obviously the biggest name is Corion Harris.
Right.
Who obviously was able to get here ahead of schedule.
Which is huge.
Yeah.
Because he's going to show his freshman even getting here. And that's what teammates said. He looked like a freshman sometimes, and other times he didn't because he's really serious about it. He's long. He's got enough speed. He's agile. He's not a freak athlete, but he looks like a guy who's really going to become a good football player.
Yeah, and I think the thing that probably was mentioned most was that he would get beat on a play initially, but then... And even though he's not necessarily a speed guy, would have the instincts to recover and get back and make a play on the ball, even if he got beat at the line of scrimmage. So that's huge, and that's a positive sign. He's not just getting beat and then getting torched time after time. He's competitive about it, and he has the skill set and mindset to go out there and make something happen. He's obviously as hyped of a recruit as KU has had in a long time. Tate, I was curious, is there anybody in your time of covering KU football that was maybe as touted heading into his freshman year?
Marquell Combs. JUCO guy, but no.
Self-touting.
No. Yeah, right. Yeah. That was a big part of it, too. No, I don't think so. I mean, you you go back and you try to think of the big stars guys, right? And,
right, because he's a four-star guy.
Right,
yeah.
So that's a limited number right there to begin with. Prince Candy, Ryan Murphy, neither of those guys panned out quite as well. And the other thing is, you know, those were before this social media blew up. So even if they were, they weren't, you know, because there's no way. I mean, the exposure, the opportunity to be seen and connect and all that these guys have these days, it's a much different thing. So it seems like he's way more hyped than anybody that I can remember. But but it also could be a part of the landscape and the era and all that. But I still think that just talent wise and talking to the coaches and those types of things. I mean, yeah, I saw him. I didn't make it out to practice at all, but I saw him around town and he's little. I was surprised. I mean, I didn't expect him to be a full-on man-child. You know, he's a freshman, but he's
pretty tall though. But yeah. he's not built yet.
Yeah, he's not very wide, and obviously has some work to do to add to the frame and all that stuff. But that you know, if you can play, you can play. You don't need to worry about that there. And it seems like he's focused and absolutely here for the right reasons and ready to go.
Yeah,
that's what's cool. I think he'll if they need a face, he can be it. And I don't think that's too much to put on a guy even as a freshman, because this guy seems to be sort of built to handle that.
I think the coolest thing about him coming in is that he was able to be here in the spring,
yeah,
which gives him that much better chance of being on the field more this fall. You know, because when you're talking about cornerback and true freshman, like, those aren't words that you hear together generally in the Big 12.
No, Chris Harris, did everybody had keep to lead coverage the third of the field.
Yeah. So that's all KU needs is like an Aqib Talib type.
Yeah, that's all.
Of Corian Harris.
No big deal.
Super easy to do that.
Yeah.
But Tom, my sense is that this guy, I mean, obviously they haven't said anything, but he has a real chance to start this season.
I think so. Yeah, definitely. And if he doesn't, it's not a big deal because he'll be in there playing. But because he has the right attitude. And they love that he's pushing the other guys, because those guys don't want to lose a starting job to a freshman. They don't care how many stars he has next to his name. And that's good for a program. That kind of competitiveness is good. And I don't know about the not picking a quarterback. That kind of competitiveness can be bad. Just because it tells you maybe there isn't one guy good enough and the team isn't lining up behind one guy. But having that a freshman like Corian Harris pushing those guys, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Carter Stanley told me on the first day of spring practice, I think it might have been Bender. Stanley didn't throw him under the bus or anything, but I figured out it was Bender. Threw a deep ball that Harris initially got beat at the line of scrimmage, made up the space and time, picked it off, and he was so pumped, he was like decided to just punt the ball away. Whiffed on the punt.
Oh my God.
Picked the ball back up, punted it 40 yards. Stanley said it was hilarious. And,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that just kind of showed you how thrilled he was just to be here and getting this process started. And
right.
He's a guy that could, Tate said, this could be your face of the program. And that'd be great if KU could have a guy come in and do that and be a four-star guy who pans out and is effective from day one.
Definitely, it'd be huge. And maybe Puka Williams could do the same on the offense. He was tiny, though. I saw him at the spring game. Yeah. He's really small.
That's okay if you're a running back, right?
Yeah.
Especially if your thing is just, like, getting out in the open field and making people miss.
Tony Pearson was small.
Yeah.
And he could freaking play.
Yeah, until he got hurt.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's true. That is true.
Any final comments from Tom Keegan or Matt Tate as we wrap up this KU Sports Hour?
I hope to see a lot of Dalen Charlotte on the field this year. Last year was a nothing year. Had one catch for 0 yards, switched to safeties, back at receiver. Really like the guy. I hope he shows his talent and has a big year, because that would be a sleeper that we wouldn't think about.
Yeah,
I agree with that. That'd be a lot of fun. And you know, I think it's going to be cool to have, what did it say, 19 starters back? 19 guys who started games, something like that? It's up around that number anyway. I mean, they keep talking about consistency. That's a big reason that Beatty's still the coach, is they want to stick with it. And I think that can go for the players too. And so, you know, you lose some guys, of course, but there's some guys out there that people will be familiar with and names that people know and things like that. And you know, Steven Sims, Joe Dineen.
Mike Lee,
yeah.
Daniel Wise.
Mike Lee seems like he still seems like a young dude, and he's a junior, right? Like, that's pretty cool. Yeah, so I think that's cool, and I do think that a lot of what has plagued Kansas football over the past several years is a lot of times it seems like they're a bit of a you know, sort of like the high school model of a JV team playing up and trying to play varsity. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work, and you can't expect to win. Maybe they're getting closer to getting away from that with these guys and these names and these veterans who have been around. Now, they still got to be the right players and they still got to perform, but maybe they're getting closer to that.
We are inching toward the start of the season. It's months from now, and we'll have plenty of KU football coverage throughout the off season as we kind of lead up to it. I think that the next big thing on the radar is mid-July, Big 12 Media Days down in Dallas, or I guess technically Frisco, Texas.
There you go.
The official home of the Dallas Cowboys now, that crazy new facility that they've got.
Dorrance's hometown.
Yeah.
Not hometown, but current home.
Yeah, now. And actually, Frisco, that's where Dom Williams is from, right? Or right outside of there.
Dom's from Frisco.
Yeah.
Or at least he played his high school ball.
We didn't even get to talk about Dom Williams today. So that tells you we've got so many more podcasts to come.
Right?
Yes. The running backs are fun to talk about because they're talented. Absolutely. Will they have room to run? Will the blocks be there? That's the question.
Everything comes back to that offensive line.
Yes, it does.
Indeed.
Well, with that, we'll wrap up this episode of the KU Sports Hour. Thanks for joining us, and we will be talking to you again real soon.